Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Adventures in Truth Podcast here with my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Smith. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Jim, marvelous. And how is the traveler?
Oh, doing well. Finally, it was a couple days of scary there coming back, time zones and no sleep. And but overall, quite an eventful experience. We accomplished really a Herculean task, quite frankly. I'm still kind of blown away by what we managed to get done in 2 weeks.
Sweet.
So
I missed you. I missed you. I missed getting together with you the last couple of weeks and doing our adventures.
Definitely agree. I mean, it's been adventures of a different kind, but haven't had a chance for us to sit and connect again and really dive into some cool juicy stuff. So I decided to bring a less weighty topic, let's say a light topic that will be easy to digest.
Right.
So my topic today is everybody's favorite, death. All the tendrils that has into our experience, and all of the aberrations of truth that exist about the ideas of death and how they happen in our, how it happens in our lives and how we respond to it and what it means. And the last probably 6 months or so for me has been, maybe it's a little longer than that, but maybe about 2 years now that I think about it, because I've had three significant friends who passed away over the course of the last 3 years. And all of them have been very interesting for me because I've had, to my own understanding, a pretty easy, pretty comfortable, if I could use that word, relationship with the idea of death and with the idea of that whole concept. It's never really been that I can ever think of. I mean, maybe in my younger days, but at this point in my life, it's not a thing that I think about in distress, or in panic, or that kind of thing. But it's been amazing how prevalent it has been in my consciousness, particularly over the last 6-8 months. This idea of little, you know, just being anywhere, doing anything, having the random thought that, is this your last moment? If this is your last moment, do you want this to be your last moment? And realizing what a stupid game it is, because it's like, you cannot gear your life to death. You can't gear your living experience to, you might die tomorrow. It creates a bizarre energy to kind of live in that space. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to kind of start from the end and work backwards, because I was, and I'm sure many have had this thought, or I know the thought has been communicated, but I had that very visceral experience of recognizing that when I go to sleep at night, I die. Every night I die. And the reason I know that is because I don't have any idea where I am from the time that I go unconscious to the time I become conscious. And that space is where death lives, to me, in my understanding of things, that it's, and probably it would be more, what's the word I want? It would be, the death process will probably be even clearer than what I don't have in my dreams. Did that make sense?
Say a little more about it.
Okay, so
what don't you have in your dreams?
I'm sorry?
What don't you have in your dreams?
Well, sometimes there's not clarity. There's not continuity. There's not, or there's nothing. You know, maybe I don't remember my dreams. Or like last night, I had this sort of weird episode of dreaming. And actually, Trump was in my dreams last night, which has never happened.
How was Donald?
Weird. It wasn't a political dream. It was weird. It was really very peculiar. And I don't remember so much of the details now that the day has worn on so much, but I woke up thinking about it was like I was having this conversation and I woke up thinking, oh, that's what it's going to feel like to die. I'm just not going to be present here anymore. Because for that duration of 8 hours, I'm not present in this reality. I don't have any connection to this reality. There's nothing that would tell me that I'm living in this reality until I come back into this body and animate it again, right? So thinking in those terms is sort of interesting to me because regardless of, so then that takes me to the next step, which is this idea of the truth of death is scary and frightening and oh my God, and it's going to be whatever it is. It's got to be horrible because everybody thinks death is horrible, except death is what everybody has to deal with. There's nobody here who's getting out alive ever. So it's kind of fascinating that we demonize the end of our experience here when it is the natural part of the experience. It's a part of the evolution. So taking that even further, this idea of it isn't the fear of death that most people probably have, it's the fear of how they're going to die that most people have. It's the fear of the way that it's going to occur. And interestingly enough, that's also been a large part of my process in this processing death process and going over again and again, thinking about, so do people really experience what we experience in the death process? So is the truth of death that if you have a traumatic, quote, traumatic, because traumatic is a judgment assessed from the viewpoint of the people still alive, not from the person who died.
Right.
So we don't know what their experience was. We don't know that when that car crash happened, if they weren't already gone by the time the crash happened and the crash just facilitated the termination of the physical vessel. You know, I mean, to the degree that it has been in my thought process of thinking of things like, I remember when I flew back to see my dad last October, I went through this whole bizarre process of thinking about the plane breaking open mid-flight. You know, and bodies flying out of the plane and all of that going on. And I thought, okay, if we're going to go there, I'm going to play along with my mind. I'm going to play with this. So I decided that I would allow it to go until I was done, until I died in the process, right? In the process of my imagination. Could never get there. I could never get to the point of dying in my imagination, which I think is also a fascinating thing to explore a little bit. But what I also came to was what we don't know from the dying person's perspective is, did they die? Did they leave the body? Does the body shut down? Does something occur feet above the ground before the body slams into it? Does, you know, like what's happening there? Because we've on this side have demonized the process and made a bunch of scary, fearful things about it. But the person who's going through it, even if you think about the people who are on the planet who apparently communicate with the dead, you know, that communicate with loved ones from the other side and all of that.
Right.
You don't get stories back about what a horrible experience they had.
Only none. I want to emphasize that. Only none.
Yeah. Nobody's on the other side going, oh my God, that was the most horrible thing that ever happened ever, ever, ever.
Only nobody. Amazing. Only nobody. And I'm tempted right now to reach to my left in my bookcase and pull out 5 or 6 books that say like It's a Wonderful Afterlife, all these different books that have been written that none of them have any of those examples in there.
Nope, I haven't heard them.
You're on a great track. I can't wait to hear you keep going.
Well, it carries on to the what you do hear, what you do get feedback is, I'm good, it's all good, I'm fine. And I still, and again, I never hear anything about them on the other side going, dude, why didn't you turn your turn signal on? Or, there's no comeback of blame. There's no comeback. It's always about soothing and assuaging and realizing that, no, everything, it's all good.
Right.
Because the person who got there went, I think I shared this with you, but when my friend, what we were referencing at the beginning of the podcast was that I just recently was on Maui for the past 2 weeks dealing with the estate of a dear friend who passed back in January. And when I got the phone call that he had passed, my first instinct was to go sit down and be quiet and attempt to feel him. I wanted to see where he was. I've done enough of this work and been around enough of the death experience to know that if I quiet myself, I will feel some experience of them if I allow for it. And for the reference to the other two that died, the same thing happened with both of them. With Scott was a very interesting experience because I sat down and I was concerned about where his headspace was because he had gone through a very powerful process with a brain tumor, had gone through chemo and radiation. And 4 days before he died, I spoke to him on the phone and he had just received the results of his latest PET scan, which showed that there was no cancer in his brain. And 4 days later, he was dead. And the death certificate says that he died from the brain tumor. So it's kind of this interesting conundrum. And the quickness with which it happened, because my first thought was he was in the best space that I had ever experienced him in this lifetime. You know, in that he had made some quantum, amazing, powerful shifts in his experience and had managed to unravel and release some personality stuff that had been plaguing him for all of his adult life. And he had actually come to a place of finding some peace. And so when I sat down to feel into him, I was just sitting there and closed my eyes and just breathing a little bit. And so I'm reaching out for Scott and all of a sudden I have this wave of energy crash through my body and all I can feel is this sense of, oh my God, I didn't know it was like this, you know, kind of feeling. It was like, holy crap. You know, I just showed up at Disney World on a level that I didn't know Disney World could ever pull off, kind of thing, you know?
Right. Right.
But it went through my whole body. It wasn't just a thought that trickled through. It was that wave of goosebumps, you know, that energy that taps in. And it was like, oh, he's good. Okay. So now I don't need to sweat. I don't need that. That part's good. Now it's, let's deal with what's happening on this end of the world. And so again, and my previous, the other friend that Gilbert, he was, his was also, he saw it coming. He could feel it coming. He had told a friend, he was talking on the phone that he wasn't feeling well. And 2 hours later, he was dead. His was very different. He was not very pleased about the whole process. And he kind of went into this withdrawal space and it took me time to actually find him. Cause it was like, he was not happy. He was not about wanting to get joyful. He was not about, you know, he just kind of wanted to deal with this thing. And over time he released some of that. And over the intervening months, that became a little better. And he was able to kind of show up a little more, but it was never the kind of experience that I've had with others where it was sort of, he was just dealing with his own, you know, his own transition. So it was, it fits with who I knew him to be. And it was kind of sad because, I mean, I could offer energy, but there wasn't much I could do to assist that piece of it because he had to come to terms with his own stuff. So in any case, the moral of the story is more about the whole death experience, and we can talk about connecting with people when they cross over and stuff, and it doesn't necessarily have to. It could be more a part of this podcast, but chances are good it'll be a different one. But so my mission today in bringing this adventure and truth here and exploring the truths of death is just to kind of get an opportunity to kind of take all of this stuff that has been accumulating in my experience and kind of wanting to throw it out on the table and say, let's pick this apart and let's dive into some pieces of this, because there's so many, extraordinary things here. And it's kind of a fascinating process to me, because I've actually questioned at times, is like, so is all this because I'm getting ready to check out? You know, like, am I getting ready to leave here? Because I've been spending an inordinate amount of time thinking about this, you know, and having it be prevalent in my consciousness in a way that it never has been before.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings up a lot of questions and the desire to kind of find truth, you know, like, so most people at this point would probably be freaking out because every other thought is about dying. But I don't understand why every other thought is that way. So for me, it's more of a science experiment than it is a problem. You know, like, what is going on? I don't feel like I'm going anywhere, but maybe that's how it goes. Maybe you don't know. Maybe it's a crapshoot. Maybe in the end, it's really a Russian roulette. Oh, ping. Okay. Number 237,433. It's your turn. Bye. You know, I don't know. I don't know. From everything I've learned, that doesn't seem to be the case. And it seems to be that if your desire in this lifetime is to understand consciousness and to learn more and understand your own consciousness and how it works, that process would become even more conscious on some level, in some degree. There would be a sense, there would be a knowing, there would be a clarity. Maybe not of the exact moment, but of something going down.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it just seems it seems too random to me that it would just be like whack-a-mole.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
And I'm losing a little steam, so I need you to pick me up here a second.
Okay.
Because there's so much that I'm like, okay, I want to connect the dots.
Right. Well, so far what I'm hearing you talk about with regard to the truth about death is maybe it doesn't hurt. Maybe we, through all of the movies we've watched, stories we've read, imaginations we've had, what if the truth is the soul slips out prior to the actual body going through the physical pain, mm-hmm. and it really doesn't hurt. So therefore we do not need to be worried about, concerned about, or afraid of the death experience itself. That's what I think you've been talking about so far.
Yeah, that's a beautiful summary, because as you're talking, I keep seeing pictures. The other part of things that happen with regard to trauma, especially physical trauma, is there is an overwhelming amount of evidence that demonstrates that the body shuts down in trauma.
Yeah.
So the person experiencing it doesn't even remember that it occurred in many cases, depending on the severity.
Right.
So there are mechanisms already built in to manage this process for every human being on the planet, to the degree that your mind and your emotions haven't made you a complete crazy person about the concept of it. Because in the creation of your end life experience, you could create a massive catastrophic, miserable experience.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you could create a situation where you're dismembered and conscious of it and going through all of that. I'm not sure why you'd want to, but you could, and many have, and probably many more will. I think it speaks a lot to the place of where you are in peace with who you are.
Yeah. I have a couple of thoughts to support where we've gotten to so far in our podcast regarding what if the truth is that death does not hurt. Death is not torturous. And, I can't quote chapter and verse, but there is a place in the good book that says there is no sting in death. Mm. And I don't think you can misinterpret that. That's so short and sweet that if that is true, that would support what we're saying. There's also, I can't remember which one of the disciples were being stoned to death, But all of the disciples, interestingly enough, died what we would think of, and I even remember hearing it preached, very gruesome, that was the word, very gruesome, torturous deaths. Boiled in oil, sawn in half, stoned to death. I mean, those, all of the dudes that hung out with J-Boy ended up with what we would call great demise regarding how they finished their final moments on the planet. But one of them, there's actually an account, I can't remember if it was Timothy or Stephen or one of them, whoever was observing their stoning noticed that the soul spirit literally slipped out, and it was just the body that was experiencing the stoning. And the body by itself can do what the body does, say ouch and oh my gosh and scream and, you know, all that stuff that the body's doing. But yes, the true self has been released from that. And it, from what all the near-death experience science research that I've read and talked to the authors that wrote the books, have supported the notion that there is a divine timing of the knowing of when that's going to happen so that it doesn't surprise the soul spirit. It knows it's coming. And you even said that with one of your friends, mm-hmm. sensed that this, you know, the Grim Reaper had shown up, and that the soul spirit experiences more as a, oh, isn't that interesting? And is confused. Oftentimes there's some confusion of what's actually taking place. But that's all I wanted to say up to this point, is that I'm supporting what you've said so far, in that what if we've been taught wrong, that it's only the movies that we watch, which could only show the body, mm-hmm. only show the actors thriving and, or, you know, just writhing in pain and just reeling in pain and screaming, yep. and yelling and the horror of it all. And that's what we think we would experience, but that isn't actually how it goes down.
Yep. And that's, I think that's the whole demonization of the death process. And it just find it interesting, again, as you think about the truths that we live, why would we want to create an amazing existence to end miserably? Like, why would that be a thing? Why would we want that for anyone? So the idea that we program ourselves for it to be a hardship, or for it to be, you know, I mean, I think about even from the medical perspective, you know, there's a lot of talk, and I believe actually, you know, that allopathic medicine's mission in life is disease. It is not about wellness, it's about disease.
Right.
So if that's the focus, then everything is all about horrible things. It's all about death and destruction. It's not right. about transition.
Right.
It's getting better, but it's still supported in that, you know, if someone dies at 85 degrees, oh, we're sorry for your loss. Why? What does that mean? What do you mean sorry for, and why are you equating it as a loss? They're mm-hmm. not physically present, but if you can get quiet, if you can find your godness, you can feel them.
Sure. Absolutely.
It's not a joke, and it's not a maybe, you know. I actually had another experience with Scott. He had made a stipulation in his will for someone he was close to, who has been a tenant of his for many, many years, to be able to have first dibs to purchase his home at a very reduced price, so that, you know, because he felt like that was what he wanted for her. What he didn't realize while he was here was that a couple things. One, he had taken a second mortgage out on the house, so that obviated any possibility, because it became a process of her having to qualify for a specific amount of money. And then as she thought about it, and she realized, but in the process, I was really concerned about how to make this, and walking it, because they were his wishes. While part of me is like, but the man's dead, it's going to be what it is. But part of me is like, no, I need to honor what his choices were. That's why he picked me, because he wanted me to honor his choices. But halfway through the process, I could see that it wasn't going to happen. I could see that the likelihood was that she was not going to get the house, and it was really bugging me. And so I went, I did it again. I sat down and I said, dude, we got to talk. I need to know that you're okay with what's unfolding, because I know you didn't see it from where you were. And again, just sitting there, being there, the wave of the feeling, it was an experience of it's all good. You know, it's okay. You know, like I felt like, good, I'm doing what I need to do. I know I'm doing that, but I want to make sure that I'm not missing something.
Right.
You know? And so I want to know he's okay from his perspective, that this is wrapping the way it should wrap and will wrap for him.
Right. Right. What I love about the part of our discussion right now is you're talking about the application of the metaphysical. We're not just talking about principles and concepts and truths, but you're actually talking about, hey, this is how I do this. This is what my experience has been when I open up to the infinite and I open up to the cosmos and the universe, and I actually have an experience. And it's a positive, a loving experience that it works. And that's the application of what we're talking about. So a lot of times our podcasts are philosophy, conceptual, principle-based. What I like about where we are right now is you're talking about the application of all these things.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably why the topic was so relevant to me, because it's been, this process has just been extraordinary in that regard. And it's funny dealing with people, you know, all the people I have had to deal with in the process of executing this estate, it's extraordinary to see all of the variations of how people respond to the death experience. You know, I talked to a couple of friends who were just devastated. I mean, like full out, they couldn't get three words out that they weren't crying and having a very emotional experience about his transition. And then dealing, you know, as you deal with the bureaucracy of death, it's a racket just like everything else is. Oh my God. I mean, it just blows my mind the amount of nonsense that I have to deal with to let the guy die in peace. You know, it's like everything from the cremation to doing ceremony to the legal ends of it to it's just another commercialized thing that's driven on death instead of some other thing, instead of selling hamburgers. You know, it's just bizarre. And so it's kind of interesting to be, everybody that I dealt with, especially the people in Hawaii, there were parts of the experience that were, there was this energy coming back to me, like I was having a lot of distress about him, because that's what's supposed to happen. Except he's the least of my worry. He's dead. He's fine. You know, I got to deal with all the stuff that's here and the people that are here. But anyway, to carry further on the death process. So there are a lot of, as you unravel, as you want to become more conscious of the process, it really opens your eyes to a lot of different aspects, you know, to everything from, it surprised me when I had this experience, but I drove past a couple of cemeteries and realized in my head that I thought, what level of arrogance do we have that we think we have to preserve this carcass in a box in the ground for no good reason? Like, what is that? It baffles me. I mean, like, my first thing with Scott was, dude, we're gonna cremate you. Cool? Is that good? You know, it's like, I don't think we need to do anything fancy here. But it stimulates all that stuff, and you look at that and you go, wow. So they create these symbols that continue to drum up negative old feelings instead of allowing it all to pass away and move on and let it be.
Sure.
And find that quiet space so that when you need to connect with them, you can do that. You know? So find their favorite park or find their favorite tree or go to their favorite beach or go to their favorite store and spend a half an hour and just be in that energy with them.
Right.
Is far greater than going and standing in front of a rock with a rotted corpse in the ground that has cost you thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to procure.
Maybe that's part of it, Jim.
That's what I'm talking about, the racket.
Yeah, that maybe it's the, I paid for it, so I better go see it from time to time. you know, okay. Kind of like a gym membership. They cost money because if they didn't, people wouldn't go to the gym. They go to the gym because there's a membership they're paying. They got to utilize it. So maybe there's some of that philosophy tied into having a gravesite and, you know, all of the expense that goes along with it.
I guess it, yeah, I guess so.
But that wouldn't that be for people who really believe they need a physical connection to try to experience a metaphysical action or activity that you and I know isn't not required, that you can dial anybody up anywhere at any time. I've never had anybody say no or I'm busy.
Right.
I'll try calling again later. or no, I won't talk to you unless you go to my gravesite. I've never had that one show up.
And that's what I was just going to say is that's the last place you probably want to go spend time with them, because that's not their place. That was your place.
Yeah.
That's why I said, go to their favorite park, sit on their favorite bench, go to their favorite store, whatever, you know, wherever it is that, you know, they love, that you could stand there and share that energy with them, for that's going to connect you much more quickly to their experience than anything else.
Yeah. So. That's interesting. Cause if, you know, I don't know if there was ever a time when land wasn't an issue and you could bury anybody anywhere you wanted to. And if there was a favorite mountaintop or a favorite tree and you buried somebody next to their favorite tree, mm-hmm. you know, then I could kind of see you're doing both the same, but what it's become is, you know, there has to be city codes and there's health and safety and it's convenience. Is like, wait a minute, I don't want to drive to the top of the mountain to see Bob or Aunt Becky or whatever. I want to be able to walk out in my backyard. So, you know, a couple hundred years ago, families had cemeteries on their properties, but it was a convenient place. It was about convenience to get to it and see it and keep it mindful. But that's just because of, you know, the advances that have been made by brave folks like you and I, who are willing to live as much of our life in the metaphysical as we do the physical. Mm-hmm. We just realize that's not necessary any longer.
Yeah. Well, and it's amazing too. I mean, it would be fine if everybody was thrown in a wood crate and stuck in the ground, because then you're going to be becoming part of the soil. You're going to break down and become part of the earth. The way we do the process, that stuff sits there forever. I mean, they encase you in a steel thing so that the box can't decompose. It's just like, wow.
And
I kept thinking we should dig all this up, man. All this land is being wasted.
Right.
But, and there's no, and that's, you know, no disrespect to anyone or anything who's been there, done that, or is doing that. It's just not a preference that I see as useful in my experience. You know, it's, again, we all make choices and our choices are based on our beliefs and our ideas of what we understand of the world and of God and of the universe. And, you know, and if some can go along with it, great. And if you're not there yet, that's okay too. You know, my larger picture and larger point, I think, is to really help to kind of talk through some of this stuff about where we categorize death and how we hold it in our consciousness, how we hold it in our thought processes, that it's fascinating to me. It's wildly curious, because there's no way to really know what's going to happen there. So if we focus all of our energy into living and being and thriving in the living experience, at some point that's going to transition into something else. But the desire, I think, you know, I think about this with my friend Scott, his transition, and people would say, geez, I'm really sorry. And I would say, well, actually, he was in a really good place when he died. he had come to a level of clarity for himself that he'd never had before. So actually, I think he's in an amazing space.
What do you think the I'm sorry is really trying to communicate? I'm sorry for what?
Loss.
Like what?
Like that, like some, like, well, I don't comprehend it. That's why I struggle with it. Cause I go, loss, what did you lose? Well, the physical person is not here. I understand that. But I haven't had an experience of missing their physicalness. I miss their energy, but I don't really miss their energy because if I need it or want it, I can call them.
Right.
I can call on it. I can feel my way into it. And you know what? Even if I'm making it up, I don't give a shit. Makes me feel better.
Yeah. The experience is the same, whether it's real or it's not real.
It doesn't matter. So why not choose the one that, again, choose the thing that spins your energy up, that
right.
makes you feel connected, that makes you feel like you and that person have something, you know? But I just struggle with the idea of it being a loss.
The only loss
stuff and being your wellness being tied to that person.
Yeah. The only loss that I could identify is I can no longer connect with my loved one, with my eardrums, my vocal cords, and the senses in my body. I'm now, it isn't that I can no longer communicate with them or have a relationship with them. It's actually quite the contrary. The ability to communicate and relate and have the experience of that is actually increased. Because they're no longer in their ego, that the quality of the relationship dramatically changes. There's absolutely no loss. There is a transition.
Yeah.
That's all there is a transition of how we still relate and communicate with. And that might be the expression would be more accurately stated. I'm sorry that you're going to have to learn how to do this metaphysically. That's the only thing you could be sorry about is
right.
It's going to take you a little bit of time to figure out how to do that with them.
And that actually, that sentiment is a bit of an oxymoron because the experience is as good or greater once you find it. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I would say, yeah, absolutely as good, most likely greater.
You know, I mean, probably as we get better at it and more tuned in and, you know, that kind of thing, but,
we push this a little further with regard to the I'm sorry statement or the please. I am offering you my condolences. we say that just rolls right off the tongue. For what is what I like to say back. It's like, oh, I know you're trying to be sensitive right now, but you know, if we're using conscious languaging, what are you condoling and what are you sorry about? And one of the major things, oftentimes, maybe in particular with some of your friends that died what we would say before their time, which is kind of a funny thing to say because, like, really? You think this is a mistake? You think that the big dude in the sky is like, oh, what the heck are you doing up here? I wasn't expecting you for 20 more years. You and I are laughing right now, but you know, whether it's age 2 or 200, you know, that it rolls for as long as it rolls, you get done what you're supposed to get done, and then you're on to the next one.
Yeah.
So there's no mistake. There is no loss. There is no travesty. They died so young. Michael should still be here making songs, or, you know, Prince or any of the others, the real famous people that died in the last 4 or 5 years. It seemed to go in a big wave all at once, but their lives weren't cut short. There is no loss, only that we have to let them go. Say, hey, they were here for exactly as long as they were supposed to be to learn exactly what they were supposed to learn. And then it's over for all of us. There is no loss. So one of the other truths is there's no pain in death and there's no loss. So those are the two truths I think that we could drive home in this podcast so far that are pretty powerful truths.
Truly. Yep. I like both of those. I think it's, I was so glad you picked up the piece about the, I'm sorry and my condolences, because I kid you not, every single time, like on, particularly on Facebook, you know, a friend of mine, or, you know, somebody lost a loved one, you know, and they're sharing about it. And I literally have to sit for minutes thinking about how am I going to say what I'm going to say to support them in their process and honoring their process without supporting the notion of what I don't think is real. You know what I mean? It's a weird balancing act. So finding ways to say, loving you and supporting you through your process, or, I don't even know. I still haven't even come up with one that I try to be with the person that I'm addressing to kind of figure out what the best way to respond is, you know, so that if it's someone I know is very devout, I may go that route, but I still have a hard time doing it. So I have to figure out how not to go that route and still let them know that I care about them and I love them and I'm supporting them. And it's interesting. It's a tough one to navigate around because it's so well imbued into the culture and into the mass consciousness that this is how we perceive death and this is the way we deal with death. And so the having to take steps each step along the line, you can get a little clearer and hopefully people get a little less intense about it. So far nobody's like come back at me and said, you heartless human being. But it definitely creates a challenge to change the languaging of how we do that. Because for me, it's not okay to just throw it out there just because, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It doesn't feel good. And it certainly wouldn't be genuine because I don't believe it. So why would I want to support someone that I care about with a statement that I don't believe? So, as with all of the major mass conscious truths about how we're supposed to be or how we're supposed to live, I think it's really important that every individual takes a little time to be in the space of death to understand what their experience of it is. Because it's one of those odd things that you really don't know where you collect all your information from until you kind of sit and pull it out and look at it, until you can sit with yourself and kind of be in the idea of my death or my leaving this experience and what would that feel like and what might that be and see what it stimulates in you and what it stimulates in your experience and then be in that and just let it evolve. You're not going to go anywhere. you're not going to die thinking about dying. I mean, there's always that possibility, but that's not typically how it goes. And give yourself permission to explore this vastly amazing transition thing that we go through that nobody really, really understands. So if what's true is we really don't understand it, why make a negative outcome?
Right.
Why not create a positive one?
Yeah. Well, two of the negatives that we've identified are it's going to hurt. Yeah. Somebody's going to be sad. So what if it doesn't hurt? And what if there really is no reason to be sad? That would help a lot.
Yeah.
I have a short personal story to share that has been on my mind the last 20 minutes or so. And usually when it shows up that way and for that long, it means say it.
say it. Isn't that what
the I'm going back to 35 years ago. I'm in my early 20s. My paternal grandfather was dying. And I found myself knowing nothing about his religious upbringing or orientation. And I never knew he nor my grandmother to go to church or have any kind of a spiritual practice, which I was really mistaken by, that he had been raised Pentecostal, of all things, back in the 40s, 50s, when he was a kid. Or 20s, yeah, 20s and 30s when he was a kid. But it had gone away from it. And, he was a man's man. And he never would have been convicted of, if he was accused of being a Christian or a religious man, he never would have been found guilty of those accusations. So I knew him as carnal but honest and, a great man, but just lacking any kind of spirituality. So this was a time in my life when I had been very churched, overly churched, was one of those people you really wouldn't want to have a talk or a debate about, because I'll beat you up because I know so much about all this stuff, is kind of where I was coming from back then. So I wrote my grandfather a letter. He was in the hospital dying. I wrote it to him, addressed it to my grandmother to give it to him. She read the letter first and decided not to give it to him because it was an altar call. I was basically saying, come on, Grandpa, you got to confess your sins and admit that you need a savior. And you know, I was, you know, I felt convicted at that time that wow. I didn't want my grandfather to die. And
go to hell.
Go to hell. I could not live with that. I didn't say anything knowing I had the opportunity, right? So I find out my grandmother did not give him the letter and he died. And I'm devastated. I'm pissed at her. Gosh. And I flew out for the funeral. And after the funeral, after kind of all the hubbub had subsided, my grandmother took me aside and said, you know, Grandpa came and visited me. And I went, what? Because I'd never heard of this before. But I'm in my early 20s.
Yeah.
She goes, yeah, we were at her house. He stood right here in the hallway. And he held my hands and he said, honey, I'm fine. And tell Jeff I'm fine too.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you handle that?
Well, I'm still emotionally moved by that. You can see that right now. But I think that was the beginning of my awakening.
Yeah.
Is that I was, you know, I had been trained that if you don't have all these practices and dot your I's and cross your T's, you're going to the lake of fire. And I was befuddled, and I completely believed my grandmother, because when she told me what her experience was, her face went white and she was like, I saw a ghost. You know, that was her experience. And it was a big wake up for her. And it was a huge wake up for me.
Yeah.
And then I've come to learn over the years since that time that that's actually a fairly common experience. I don't know what the percentage is, but oftentimes within the first 3 days or so of someone passing, there'll be a visitation or there'll be a strong sense of their presence as they're wanting to let people know that they're okay. It'd also be nice if, you know, maybe we can put this out there to the universe of, it'd also be nice if you said, hey, ring me up from time to time. Don't believe the crap you've learned that just because I'm absent in the body that you can't dial me up and know that I'm going to be still thinking about you. But maybe they don't know that yet. In that first 3 days or so, they kind of don't know what the rules are or how it all works. But
well,
maybe
actually
that's what our job is.
I actually have the sense that returning experience really has more to do with the consciousness of the individual when they passed. So if there's a lot of unresolved, it's going to take them longer to sort it, you know, to get their bearing, where somebody like your grandfather, who didn't have a lack of clarity about who he was, got on the other side and went, oh, okay. I better let her know I'm good. 'Cause that's what you do. You know, that's what you do. You make sure you let your people know all's well.
Yeah.
But I, you know, the other thing that strikes me and I didn't say this when we were talking earlier about the guys, you know, the people that can talk to dead people. And it's always amazing to me that, again, of the shows that I've seen and the people that do it, the largest response is the response you just had, which is that emotional, the tears come, there's this sense of, and to me, that's them running their love through your body.
Yeah.
Truly. I mean, because to a person that I've watched it happen to, it's the first, not necessarily in your case, but in seeing the people on the TV shows and stuff, it's literally probably the first time that they've given themselves permission to feel them. Because somebody outside of them is saying, yeah, they're doing good. Somebody outside of them is saying, you know, it's okay. And so they start to relax and allow their energy field to open. And now the person can come through and just wash them through their body, you know? And I would be very curious how many of those people, I'm thinking of like the ones that like Tyler Henry and, you know, that does that. And But the where the people go in their own experience after that, how much more conscious do they become of the death process? How much more unattached do they become to the things that we're talking about, the mass consciousness of the death process? Because now, not only they have they had experienced something, quote, metaphysical, because some stranger standing in a room is talking about deeply personal things that nobody could know about, and then they have a physical experience of connection, how impactful that is, I think it would be fascinating to explore. But because again, I think it's just another way of them being trying to communicate and say, no, who, I'm here, hello. You know, it's interesting in the Law of Attraction, they talk about that everything in non-physical is focused here because this is the leading edge. This experience of being human is the leading edge of creation, is the leading edge of experience, and that all of non-physical is focused in support of this. So that when people transition, when people go, they're not going anywhere. They're changing form. They're going into a different energetic experience. They're transitioning, but their energy and love and support are here. And that may mellow out over time. But I think that at any point, you know, because time is a thing for us, it necessarily isn't a thing on, as far as we've been able to understand on the other side. So when you call that energy has never gone anywhere, and it has no, you know, it's continuing to evolve. So its forms are changing, and it's just fascinating stuff. I got sidetracked for a little bit, by the way, when we started talking about the apostles.
Okay.
it's related. And it may be another topic, but I was looking up the word apostle, and apostle is apparently a word that was created by Christians to define these people that walked with Jesus, but then they within the context of the definition they talk about disciples.
Uh-huh.
And it got me wondering, because 12 is a significant number in sacred geometry. It's a big number in quantum stuff, you know, and it just got me thinking that what if we got this whole thing messed up here, like the disciples are actually speaking of 12 disciplines, and 12 disciplines about the 12 disciplines of love, which is what the Jesus figure represents, and the teachings of love and non-conditionalness. So anyway, it's something I got to brew a little bit, but it really started this whole chain of like, do we know that all of those people were real and existed? Or is it more of the fairy tale that the whole book is pretty much predicated on, and we don't really know that those people for real existed? And what each of them represented was a very distinct type of personality and a very distinct type of approach to the world that they brought to bear in this idea of the 12, you know, which is not a whole lot different than the Knights of the Round Table, which is one of all the different. I mean, there's a lot of correlations to that kind of idea, the 12 tribes and the, you know, all that stuff. So it might be fun to explore that at another point, but I wanted to throw it out there because it sort of fascinated me.
It is fascinating.
And how it relates to death, because then I was translating that into, you know, the process of the crucifixion was just a way to really draw out and kind of draw out the worst case scenario of how you could die. And even if you get a crown, you know, even if someone puts a crown of thorns in your head, you get stabbed in the side, you have to drag across town, you have to stand on the thing and get hammered onto it and then thrown up in the air and sit there to die. Even then, a couple days, you're good. Doesn't take, you know, it's just like, it's done. And the suffering piece, all that suffering that went on for the circumstance. And in the end, it was all about peace.
Sure.
You know, so yeah, the unraveling the death thing can, I wish I had more in-depth, kind of library of, I know I've read a bunch here and there, but not stuff that comes readily to mind about how other cultures focus death and and how they focus people in their transitions. Modern society, probably most of modern society, is probably all aligned in the same mass consciousness at this point. I'm thinking more in terms of the, not that layer of mass consciousness, but then when you get down into the native peoples, you know, how they think about and how they approach it. Because it seems to me that in many other places, it's a much more sacred experience as opposed to a sad experience.
Mm-hmm.
And the sacredness leads to more joy and celebration and less sadness and depression kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I think more than half the world's population believes that it's not a one and done, that we've been here before, we'll be here again. So there is no loss. There's just a transition.
Yeah.
It goes back to, what did you learn while you were here? What did you teach from the way you lived your life? And now let's go regroup and we'll do it again. There was an experience that I had, I might have talked about it in a previous podcast, where I witnessed, I arrived on a crash scene and the freeway was stopped in both directions, and I was on the side of the freeway that crash did not occur on, but had direct observation of the body bags and the emergency responders and all of that sort of thing. And I know that there was at least one person that died, and I'd been fishing all day before, so I'm really tired and kind of like in a mild trance, one eye open kind of thing. And I remember looking over and seeing what looked to me like what I would describe angels or heavenly beings or some kind of spirit beings around the person. So there was a body bag on the ground. There was a hologram-ish translucent person that was above the bag kind of looking down, and there were people around them that were like, yeah, that's your body and you don't need it anymore. But I had this whole experience where I got to see it, and it was, and I kept thinking, wow, am I hallucinating this because I'm so tired, or what's really happening? But it, my experience of that was really sweet. And even though there were twirly lights and a whole bunch of people that were bothered by the inconvenience of all of that, it was like somehow I got to see through all of that and just see the reunion that was taking place. And I couldn't know who those people were to the one who had just graduated and transitioned, but it seemed that it was a genuine welcoming party, and it was a unique, wonderful experience.
That's super cool.
Really glad that I got to have that.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I'm digging that.
That seems to be consistent with authors that I've spoken with and know that have studied near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is oftentimes a disappointment that I got to come back and do more because I got a little bit of a taste of what's there, and it's just not my time yet. But most people that do have a new near-death experience re-enter their lives with a renewed sense or a greater sense of confidence, because there's less fear that it hurts and that there's something to be scared of. The fear of the unknown is eliminated. And as such, you just get to be in peace and joy.
Yeah. Well said. I like that a lot. So we've had, I think, a pretty good conversation here, diving into this concept of death. How are we at? I know you're on a time.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah.
I think we're pretty well in here. Is there anything else that you have at the moment that you'd like to bring to the conversation and expound upon, or shall we?
I'm just, again, thinking of some tangible things that I know research-wise for people that sometimes like more information from a scientific perspective to support our metaphysical notions and beliefs and statements that, you know, Eben Alexander's a great read on his book called Heaven is Real. It's a neuroscientist, neurologist, physician that describes his account of contracting a fatal disease and having his brain shut down and his whole experiences and being able to describe it neurobiologically. Absolutely 100% convinced that there is an afterlife. So that comes from a guy that science would heavily endorse and couldn't refute his credentials.
What's the name of the book again?
The book is called Heaven is Real. And the author is Eben Alexander.
E.B.?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. I want to make sure to put it in the notes so people can access a link to something that tells them about that.
And then there's a great deal of work that's come out of the operating rooms. One author in particular, actually one doctor in particular, I cannot remember his name, but he was a staunch atheist. These are always the funny stories of the people that have these conversion experiences going from atheism or agnosticism to something other than that. One doctor in particular kept interviewing his patients post-op, and they would all say that they had seen the operation occur. And these were operations where they were being intubated and for a period of time during heart transplant, actually dead. Their bodies actually died for a short period of time. And most all of them would have some account of leaving their bodies and seeing the event take place from across the room, above the room. So he finally said, okay, I'm going to end all of this. I think it's just a hallucination, or it's DMT in the brain, or it's, you know, a prelude to the death experience. It's what happens to all of us, but it's not a spiritual thing. So he put a Time magazine above the table, like on a bookshelf or some cabinet in the surgery room. And he wanted to see, without asking these people, did you see the magazine on the shelf? They would tell him, oh, by the way, did you know that there's a Time magazine with like Michael Jordan's picture on it from 1967 or whatever? What's that doing up there? And so, and this would happen in the post-op debrief, like a day or two later, people are like, hey, well, why is that magazine? You know, I noticed that magazine up there on the shelf that was like, you know, 5 feet above the operating room, that there was no possible way that that could be discovered unless it was being done that way. So that took a lot of bravery on his part to actually publish that, particularly because he was a non-believer of the afterlife or whatever you want to call that. But that's well researched and well documented.
If you happen to something sparks your memory or you happen to come across any of it, let's shoot me a note so I can make sure to put it in, because that's great. Again, great tools for people to kind of be able to touch into this topic a little more deeply in a way that's, you know, a way that's easier to digest, and is, you know, lots of anecdotes of that help to bring some understanding. And I'm also, you know, the other thing that I realize too is I think that people have more of those experiences than they give themselves permission to, in the sense that It's not rare at all for people who seem to not have a lot of connection to come up with things of kind of the experiences you were talking about, like driving on the side of the freeway, but they never talk about them because they don't fall within the confines of their religious experience. And so they coordinate off to some other portion of their, you know, their memory until sometime later in life, if they decide to transition that to, you know, to broaden their experience. But I think it's a very rare thing that people don't have those kind of experiences. They may just may not be giving themselves permission to say, oh yeah, I remember that. It's kind of cool. From my perspective, you know, I love that to give people tools that they can have books to look at, or, you know, a website to go explore, but also the basic simple things, you know, which we talk about regular, is that find that place to get quiet. You know, if you don't believe me, try yourself. You know, it's not a hard thing to do. And it's a little weird at the beginning. You know, it's a little challenging at the beginning because you're questioning yourself. And is that real? Is that a feeling? Sure. I would encourage you to go into it just allowing whatever happens to happen and then go to the next one. And maybe after you've done it 10 or 15 or 20 times, then start to think about what your experiences have been. Then start to go, so what's been consistent for me over these 10 or 20 experiences? What have I been feeling? What have I not been feeling? And kind of take it from that exploratory place where you're not diving into it, you know, with this, okay, I'm going to focus now. No, you're going to just be quiet and relax.
Yeah.
You're going to be quiet and relax. And then once you feel that relaxation, then you're going to call on an energy, whatever you want to call on, you know, call on your grandpa, call on your cousin, call on whatever. Just reach out with your energy and just ask for their presence, ask for their experience, and then just allow yourself to feel whatever happens. Maybe you journal it, you know, but don't assess it. Just put it down. And then what you'll find is that over those 10 or 20 experiences, there's a consistency in those experiences that when you don't judge all of it, you'll start to see the patterns unfold.
Right.
And then you can start to, then you can start to dive more deeply into, wait a second, you know, then you can have those epiphanal moments and go, all right, maybe I need to pursue this a little differently. But to give yourself the permission to do that. And it's an easy, simple process that can reap tremendous rewards.
You know, agreed. And yeah.
Supporting that and backing it up with, you know, some other people, if you need those people who have the letters after their name to validate your experience, that's okay.
Right.
You right. don't.
I like that you wanted to share with our listeners the application of dialing up, connecting with, bonding, and just the experience of they're not gone.
Right.
We just have to learn how to access them in a different way. And that's, without exaggerating, something I get to do 3 or 4 times a week. And how that unfolds in my practice is, because I'm a trauma therapist, there'll be some traumatic event that, let's say I'm working with somebody in their 40s, the trauma happened when they were a kid. So by this time, if it involved their parents in many cases are already dead, or a grandparent or an uncle or something. And as soon as I ask the question, where is that person now? And they say, oh, they died 2 years ago or whatever. I say, okay, I don't know how this part works. Now, keep in mind, they have their eyes closed and they've got these little pulsers in their hand and they're in a little bit of a mild trance. And they're already back in time anyways. They've already done somewhat of a supernatural leap in going back in time to visit their, say, 5-year-old self when the trauma was happening. And they're there as their present self, as an advocate for the younger self. And so then the next step is, I said, wherever dad is now, let's say dad died, I just say, I don't know how this part works. I just know that it does. And if you're open to the connection, it'll happen. I've never had it not happen if somebody was willing to have the experience. And sometimes I say, if you have any religious beliefs that are in the way, like, you know, we're not supposed to communicate with the dead. Well, we pray to Jesus, and I think Jesus is the dead guy. So, you know, if we can talk to Jesus, it's probably okay to talk to Aunt Betty or whatever. I don't think Aunt Betty's going to steer you wrong. So if you just go with it, and wherever they are in the universe right now, in whatever the form they're in, wherever they are, just let your mind go find them. Mm. Whether you think they're on a cloud or they're in a garden or they're playing golf in heaven or they're, you know, whatever, just let your mind go find them. And it's always fascinating to me to, and I just say, and when you feel like you got some kind of contact, let me know. Just tell me what you see, what you notice. And sometimes it is a garden setting. Sometimes it is a golf game or a checkers or something that they knew that person liked to do. That's just how their mind is putting it together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a more of a mist, like vapor, misty, cloudy kind of a, I don't really see a face or anything, but I know that I'm resonating with this person, and it feels genuine and it feels authentic.
Yeah.
I said, okay, so keep in mind that they're no longer in that limited persona. Their ego's not there. So whatever we ask of them and from them, they're going to give it to us from 100% unconditional love. They're not limited by anything. So if you want an apology, ask for an apology. If you want for guidance, ask for guidance. Whatever it is you're asking for to get clarity or to create the reunion or the connection, they're going to give it, and they want to. They want to. They absolutely want to. They can't wait to. And then the tears start coming, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know. And then afterwards, when we're finished, people look at me like, how did you do that? I said, I didn't do it.
That's right.
Just, you know, asked you to trust and be open and have the experience. And there it was. There's nothing magic in this office. It's just somebody that's done it a bunch of times and has an expectation that it'll happen again.
Yeah.
It's not hard. It just, the hard part is pushing past the disbelief.
Yeah.
Or pushing past, I'm breaking a rule, or I'm doing something wrong. I mean, my gosh, I cannot imagine any better counsel that we could get from our departed loved ones. And one of the things about the way that I love counseling now is I said, you know, you can come in here and I can do talk therapy with you, and I can tell you know this I've seen work and this I doesn't have seen not work. But why don't we ask the people who have had the full experience and they have the full clarity and vision of where they are now, let's dial them up and ask them. And it isn't going to be them telling me to tell you. That's not how I do it. I'm not the medium or the channel. I'm creating space that they're having their own experience.
Yes.
And I've never had anybody go, you know, Aunt Betty told me to go home and kill my dog. And that never happened. It would never happen. This weird thing that would come.
Worship Satan.
Right.
That was beautifully and eloquently described. I think anyone. I was actually sitting here thinking, I wonder if we should put a little script together. So, but really, that situation would require more of a one-on-one type of thing, just so that you have. The person who's going to the experience can just be in the experience.
Yeah. Well,
but nonetheless, it's still amazing.
And, sure.
And it's still truly something. If you have someone you trust or someone you're close to, you can walk yourself through that. I mean, it's, you know, that which is no way diminishing your work. Your work is extraordinary. And again, leading edge stuff. I think that most people just don't think they can do it.
Right. Yeah, so that's where we go visit the gravesite, because now there's something physical I'll give that the credit. I'll give the credit to, oh, it's because I went to the gravesite that I had this experience.
So we've gotten to talk about blowing up some of the what we perceive as the illusion of death is painful, blowing up some of the illusion around, what was the other one? Death is
loss.
Loss.
Yeah.
That I think
condolence.
Yeah.
There's reason for condolence.
And the more we can, I think the more we can normalize it as a part of the transition experience, the easier it becomes for everybody. Because I thought about this earlier and I didn't say it, and I want to make sure I say it now. And that is, there is a process of loss that occurs, especially if it's someone that you're in physical proximity to all the time, every day. There is a physical process you have to go through. You spent an inordinate amount of time intertwining your energetic fields over a long period of time. And that abrupt shift in that, and again, I'm using the word shift because it's not the end of, it's a shift right. into a new
right.
experience. So the reason we go to loss is because we think those energetic connections have been lost.
Right.
The reality is
they're dead.
Yeah.
It's not just lost. It's
the dead.
Dead. Done.
And the reality, at least as far as I think in our conversation, is that that's the furthest thing from the truth. Mm-hmm. And it's the furthest thing, the thing that will keep you the furthest away from having completion, having a continued relationship, and continuing to experience the love that they have now that's so much greater and so much less encumbered, as you were saying. I chose the word encumbered, but you said it in earlier. And recognizing that the relationship is just changing. They haven't left you. You know, they're not, it's not a gone thing. And that the more we can support that and understand that and step into that, the greater service we provide to people here and there.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting to realize, oh, this isn't a hardship. I'm a weirdo. I still talk to them like they're here. You know, it's like every now and again, something will happen. And when I was in Hawaii, I would, a number of times Scott showed up and it was like, dude, what do you want? You know, like, I have to tell you this story because it just cracked me up. We were getting ready for the celebration of life. So I think we ended up having about 25 people there. It was a beautiful thing. It went really, really well. But all morning before this process, the photographers were at the house to take pictures of the house to put the house on the market. And I had only been in town for 3 days, so I was trying to get everything organized, and we're getting the food and the tables and, you know, all that stuff going on. So I finally get done all the things and I need to go take a shower. I take a shower, I get dressed, I go out of where I'm staying in the cottage up to another room, and I get there and I go, I don't like what I'm wearing. I want to change my shorts. And I'm wearing flip-flops. So I go back into my room and I take my flip-flops off, you know, like, you know, just kind of the bed's right there. So I just sort of kicked them off so I could take my shorts off and put on my new shorts. Put on my new shorts, look down, there's one flip-flop. The only thing in the room is a blow-up mattress with a sheet on it and my bag in the closet and Michael's bag in the other side of the closet. There's nothing else in the room. And the shoe is gone. And I'm like, and I'm all angsty because it's getting time for this celebration and I'm kind of getting all pent up and I'm like, and now I don't like what I got on and I want to change my clothes. And I'm, you know, so I'm feeling this sort of, my head's kind of spinning and I'm angsty and the freaking flip-flop's gone. And I stopped and I went, why are you fucking with me, Scott? What are you doing? What's going on here? You know? And all I heard in my head was, dude, lighten up. I was like, well, no, I don't want to lighten up right now. Where's my shoe? Tore the room apart. No shoe. I go out to get Michael. Michael, I can't believe he took my shoe. Would you please go find my shoe? Michael went into the room, could not find the flip-flop. So I put on a different pair of shoes, go out. We had the ceremony, and I shared that story during the ceremony. And the next morning, I get up. And I don't know what prompted me. I went into where Michael had his stuff on the other side of the closet. Now, bear in mind that the closet that I'm talking about was behind me when I was taking off my shorts to put my stuff on. Tucked under some of his clothes, under his bag, is my other flip-flop. I'm like, really? Really? I swear to you, there was no way. It just blew my mind. And everybody at the ceremony said the exact same thing about, oh, he's just playing with you. He can lighten up a little bit. And I said, I know, I got the message, but I told him I'm not interested in lightening up right now, which is also funny because that's also something that Scott would have said. You know, my response to him is also something he would have had that response to me if I had given him that feedback, you know? But I forget why I was telling you that, other than it's a great anecdote. But
it is.
But things, it's just amazing how more and more those little connections and things, and you feel them and you experience them, and you know, and yeah, you can still get upset and you can still be pissed that they're not physically present in front of you. This is where we started here. All of that human emotion, all that range of human emotion, is significant and important. Because it's training us how to perceive differently. That's really what the opportunity is. It's an opportunity to learn perception in a whole different way. And when we give ourselves permission to do that, the amount of joy that can come from that experience and the ease that you begin to deal with those transitions really radically changes your life, because you now no longer have that end game fear thing. You know, that it's all ending in a culmination of fear and destruction. You know, it's like, how is that? Why would we want to live? Why do we live our lives that way? There's no reason to fear death. There's no reason to run from it. There's every reason to live your life as fully as possible so that you can be conscious of that moment. How great would it be to be able to be conscious of that transition?
Yeah.
You know, I just think that would be extraordinary. So, anything you would like to bring in closing with us today in this?
Two things. One, the fear is going to be from ego only. Mm. In previous podcasts, we've talked a little bit about how it's possible that ego may be a one and done fabrication with regard to personality and genetics and culture and all that sort of thing. It could be the snowflake that only happens once in the universe. But ego is not who we are. We are soul and spirit. Mm-hmm. So it's just the fear, you know, the spirit and soul has no fear. It has nothing to be afraid of because it knows what it is and how it works. And that oftentimes is embedded in the subconscious, unconscious mind. And we're mostly conscious egoically. That's where the fear is. And fear is not real. So we have to just remind ourselves that it's okay that ego is here. It's to teach us the lessons we need to specifically learn in this incarnation. Mm. And that's all that it's needed for. And it doesn't need to show up like soul spirit does time and time and time again. So that was one thought that I had as far as where the fear comes from.
Yeah.
And the other thought I wanted to spin back to was that experience I was sharing with my grandmother and my grandfather. I don't know if you caught it or the audience did, or if I, you know, was specific enough about pointing out the uniqueness of that experience. Was my grandfather never got the letter that he knew that I was concerned about him. He never got the letter, but his message to my grandmother was tell Jeff that I'm okay.
Yeah.
He knew in that place, he had that knowledge. He had that information or that awareness.
Well, and it ties exactly with your Time Magazine analogy too, from the other one, you know, to be able to have that, to see that clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I have a table in my consulting room that my grandfather built. And, you know, I see it every day. I think about him all the time. He's with me all the time. So in a prior life,
that beautiful wood piece.
Yes. Yeah. He built that. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So it's, you know, it's nice to have family heirlooms around that consciously remind us of our connection with our relatives. And that is a way to also help as far as like we were talking, the application of these connections is go hold on to something. You don't need it. You don't need it. I want to emphasize it's not necessary. It's sometimes just helpful for the ego part to go, oh yeah, it's happening because you got your hand on the table right now. Okay, fine. We'll humor you and you can have that.
Exactly.
But it isn't necessary. Sometimes it's just like you said, I love that you said, go do 20 or 25 experiments and see what they all have in common.
Yes. So we've had a excellent adventure in death, and actually it was pretty light and pretty accessible, I think, as a way of conversation. But it just can't iterate enough. You may not be able to bite this off in one bite. You may not be able to take this all in one fell swoop. All that we ask, all that we'd love to see for anyone is that it helps to adjust perspective even a little bit, that it enables you to be willing to step into something a little different, and you don't even have to commit. You can play at it to see where it goes. You know, it's not like you're forever, you know, if it's too much, you can always go back and pray for forgiveness.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not an all or nothing. You know, we're all on an evolution. We're all on a process of transition. So each step is what matters. Each understanding, each connection, each dot that we connect, sure, that's what's significant.
Yeah.
That's the satisfaction. So, yeah. You know, I know we take, we dive wholeheartedly and, you know, feet head first, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're going down and we're going in. And we do that because we're comfortable there. And we're comfortable being able to do that in a way that we hope does not in any way belittle or make anyone wrong about where they are and who they are and what they do. It's a desire to simply bring some expansion, to bring some different perspectives.
Right.
To touch a little more deeply on some of those areas that we've bought we've bought into, but don't really understand why and don't really understand it. So we like to try to help understand it better.
Yeah, yeah. I have a short summary to offer.
Please.
We have established that in physics, there is only light, and it's in the absence of light that we have an experience that we call dark. Mm. You cannot create dark. Dark cannot be created by itself. It's only from removing light that you have the experience of dark. Heat is the same way. There's only heat. In the absence of heat, we have an experience that we call cold. The cold by itself does not exist. You can't just go make cold. The only way to get there is you have to remove heat from something to get cold. Love. There is only love. In the absence of love, you get to a certain place where there's the absence of love. We get to a place, if you could imagine it on a time, on a continuum, you'd start out with some selfishness that would evolve to what religion might call a sin. And you keep going down that, you might get to evil. But evil by itself, you can't make evil. The only way to get to evil is to remove love. So there is only love. So now let's do one more. There is no such thing as death. There's life, and in the absence of life, we have this experience that we call death. But death isn't real, just like cold isn't real, darkness isn't real, evil isn't real. It's only in the absence of what is that we have this experience that we give a name called death. And as we've talked today, it's just a transition. The death did not occur. The true essence of that soul spirit continues on. There was no death. It's just an illusion. And we simply now need to learn to communicate with that entity in a new way. But death is not real. That's the truth. How's that for a summary?
You just made my day. That was, I think I got a little moist there. That was pretty cool. Quite frankly, I was loving that.
Nice.
Sorry, a little off color there, but sometimes it just takes me there. So, you know. But so great to be here with you again, my friend. Just another great conversation. So enjoy bouncing things around and just really tearing it up. So to everybody out there in podcast land, thank you so much for being here and for participating and listening in. And we're excited about the website coming out and hopefully some events here in the future that we can connect even more. And other than that, happy adventures, everybody.
Happy adventures.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com. We also offer video versions of our podcast. Visit our page on YouTube at Adventures in Truth Podcast. We would love to hear from you. Like, connect, and follow with us on Facebook. Want to book us for your next podcast or to speak at your event? Head over to our webpage at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com at the bottom of the page and send us a note. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you again at Adventures in Truth Podcast.